This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. In his new book, Full Count, Raleigh author Wynn Nagel mixes it up. There's Major League Baseball, a major league player batting nearly 400. There's also homosexuality, a man with a smell, his shotgun-toting, and his shotgun-firing girlfriend. Meanwhile, it's all set in Raleigh, which, in this book at least, has a Major League Baseball team. And Major League Baseball, at least in the story in Full Count, will have an openly gay player. Full Count tells the story of Billy Overby, a baseball player pursuing a 400 batting average one season, who gets sidetracked by what is, for him, a strange and new attraction to a man who saved his life. Author Wynn Nagel is with us here in the studio. Welcome, Wynn.
Thank you, Melinda. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. Now, Full Count, as I say, tells the story of this baseball player, Billy, who is pursuing a 400 batting average. He is a hero to fans everywhere. And what transpires is he eventually falls in love with a man. But I was hoping you might set us up with the opening page about Billy.
Great, I'd love to. Opening pitch. As of this moment, Billy Overby has never fallen in love. Despite the fact he has enjoyed lots of sex with women of many different ages and physiques, outdoors and indoors, afternoon quickies and steamy all-nighters, the only thing akin to love to ever become passionately lodged in 26-year-old Billy Overby's soul is baseball. Freud tells us that we have few conscious memories before the age of four, so as far as Billy knows, there was never a time when he wasn't attached to baseball. By Billy's fourth year, his father had taught him to swing a bat, a sawed-off pool stick with tapered ends wrapped in duct tape, from both sides of the plate. And then his father died. Billy's earliest memories are of his grief-stricken mother pitching in relief. There were years of financial hardship, and there are touching stories we could explore about the young boy having to be the man of the house, working odd jobs after practice, and making home repairs while his schoolmates worried about little more than video game villains and history tests. But those days have passed, and now Billy's mother watches her son on a 42-inch screen in the corner of the Billy Overby Foundation soup kitchen. She and her small staff watch along with more than 100 of Raleigh's homeless to see if Billy will reach base against Colorado's prize starter, Clarence Macy. Thanks to Billy's prowess at the plate, the Carolina Waves, in only their third year of existence, find themselves two games behind first-place Colorado. More important, if Billy can get a hit off of Macy during this at-bat, his average will rise to over 400 for the season.
Wynn Nagel reading from the opening page of his book, Full Count. And so as the story goes on, Billy Overby is doing well, getting toward that 400. But then, we'll get into more of the story in a moment, but he falls in love with a man. And I'm wondering where this idea came from to have a gay major league player, because in the real world, there may be gay major league players, but none of them are talking when they're playing, at least.
Absolutely.
There's not an out major league player. So first of all, why did you decide to write about this?
Well, I think the idea for this book originated with a Salon.com article written by King Kaufman back in 2002. In fact, he has the article opens with some great lines the idea of course, we've had gay baseball players, but they have not been openly gay. And his opening lines are, "The list of great gay baseball players is long and distinguished. It would astonish you to see who's on it. Of course, nobody knows who's on it." And in this article, King Kaufman talks about a statement made by Brendan Lemon, the editor of Out Magazine, who apparently was dating an East Coast baseball player of some stature. And Lemon had written an article saying, I'm encouraging this player to come out. And Kaufman says that he thinks Lemon's being a bit naive in his projections of the consequences of that. And the article goes on to list the views of several people. And one of the views that really stuck with me was Larry Boa, a great baseball player himself in his time, made the comment that, look, it's going to be a lot easier if the first openly gay baseball player bats 340 instead of 220. The idea that if this is simply a utility infielder, he could easily quietly just disappear quietly, and we wouldn't hear from him again.
Do you have any do you have any sense of why it is? I mean, certainly there are openly gay people in many other walks of life, but it does appear that in major league sports, men's major league sports, there's not a lot of coming out. Is it the whole... I'm wondering what your theory is on why that is.
Well, yeah, this was Lemon's point. Come on, this is the 21st century. Mm-hmm. It's no big deal. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the locker room atmosphere. Athletics was pretty much my life growing up as a kid. My teenage years were basically spent playing basketball 365 days a year. I think a lot of things going on, and part of it is tradition. And, of course, a lot of the shallow-mindedness, closed-mindedness that is faced by the homosexual community is rooted in some irrational clinging to tradition. And for whatever reason, I think most people would be in concurrence that this locker room atmosphere, the atmosphere of professional sports, it would not go without notice, and perhaps with just a lot of obstacles should someone wish to be the first openly gay baseball player. And one of the things I wanted to look at in the book and was I wanted to bring out the fact that although that is the case, it's not like this world of professional athletes isn't highly sexually charged. And I think... in my mind, one of the great injustices that happens to the gay community is they are overly sexualized. When we define someone by their sexuality, it's just completely unfair, I think, that one of the things I realized as I was trying to think as a writer, what's it like to be a gay male? And, you know, what I finally realized is outside of the social obstacles, the familial abandonment and whatnot, it came to me that there is no difference. A homosexual is a person with a sex life, a professional life, friends, what have you. And the fact that we have gone to the extent of going to the polls to pass resolutions regarding the sex life of a portion of our population just blows my mind. I guess that this novel comes a lot out of confusion. I just don't get it. I don't understand.
This is a sexual confusion of a different sort.
Yeah. I don't understand why a portion, and it's a smaller and smaller portion, but I don't understand why a portion of the heterosexual community is so afraid of homosexuality. It just seems like we shouldn't care.
We're talking with Raleigh author Wynn Nagel. His new book is called Full Count. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-877-962-9862. I'm going to posit a question here to you, and that is, do you think that Raleigh would get a Major League Baseball team first, or will we see a gay Major League Baseball player who is out first? Or will pigs fly first?
You know, I think we'll have an openly gay baseball player before the pigs take off. As far as the pro sports team in Raleigh, I think it's very likely we will see the first openly gay baseball player before that happens. I feel like it may not be that far down the line. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll see.
And so we have in your book, baseball is almost like another character. During many of the baseball scenes, you're interspersing the action with little historical baseball notes as well. What were you trying to do there?
Have some fun. I really enjoyed the research I did on baseball. I learned about a number of colorful characters. For instance, one of them who did not make it into the book, Germany Schaefer, who was a player back at the beginning of the 20th century, and quite a character evidently, would sometimes appear at the plate in a rain slicker, and actually is the all-time leader in first base steals. Germany Schaefer was on first base with a teammate on third base at one game, I think, back in the 1910s.
And so he'd wear this raincoat
At times, sometimes it was raining, sometimes it wasn't. But in this one particular play, they were going to attempt what's known as a double steal. Schaefer was going to steal second, hoping to draw a throw from the catcher to second base, and in hopes that his teammate might score from third. Well, the catcher refused to throw the ball. And so what Schaefer did on the next pitch was run back to first base. And then he tried it again on the subsequent pitch, and the catcher was so flustered he threw the ball into the outfield. And about a week later, a rule was passed that no player shall run the bases backwards with the intent of confusing the other team or making a mockery of a game. So I think it puts the umpire in a pretty tough position at judging whether or not someone's trying to make a mockery of the game. But for that reason, Schaefer's our all-time first base steals leader.
Okay. You know, interesting thing about baseball and your work here is that when I Googled your name online, I came up with your name appearing as the author, but also Wynn colon Nagel.
Denny Nagel.
Yes.
Yes. And evidently we are cousins somewhere down the line. I've never spoken to Denny, but I do know that Wynn colon Nagel scenario does pop up.
Indeed. Now, you know, in this book, there are some other observations that you make here. There is Billy Overby, of course, and that's the character you have as this baseball player who's going after the 400 record and the 400 season, and also falls in love for the first time with a man. That man is someone named Cameron, who the distinguishing feature about him that keeps coming up and that other characters in your book notice is that he has a smell. And I'm wondering if you could describe what his smell is. Because one rarely hears about smell in literature. I mean, it's usually about sight or sound.
Well, I think one of the interesting components of Cameron's scent is it seems to be interpreted differently by different people he runs across. And one thing it does on a regular basis is evoke memories. And we're all very aware of the tie between memory and smell. And I think regardless of how it morphs from one instance to the next, it's always something very primal, earthy. I think the different things we compare it to are part blood, part honeysuckle, I think. And I had fun with that, playing with his smell, and I think it helped to really bring him off of the page.
Mm, it does, because one character notices that the smell brings back this memory of a type of cheese that his mother put on a sandwich on this one particular day. So that gets me to, when I hear that somebody reminds them of cheese, I'm thinking, if I ran into that person, would I be stepping back about 2 or 3 feet back here?
Right.
I mean, is this a pleasant smell? Or is this just a noticeable smell?
Well, I think if we were to bring in biologists, they could tell us that it's quite possible that someone with a strong smell could indeed be repulsive to some members of the population while being highly attractive to others. And I guess the key to me is not whether it's a pleasant smell or not, but it is certainly a smell that has impact. In fact, we know that Amanda, our gun-toting girlfriend, says that this is the thing she will miss about Cameron the most, is his smell. She says she will hate him forever for his smell.
Now, what writers were you influenced by?
Well, there's no doubt that Kurt Vonnegut has been a big influence on my writing. A week prior to drafting a big chunk of my first novel, Smoke and Gravity, I had read Breakfast of Champions, Vonnegut's use of what I'll call the micro scene really appealed to me. I thought this is a nice way to tell a story with these fragments that really hang together but move quickly from one to the next. And I drank a lot of coffee after reading it and started writing Smoke and Gravity. And I think it's a way I will continue to write stories. I feel like it's a it's a shape of story that's appealing to a lot of readers as well. And you know, maybe it's a little bit of my ADD, but I like making things as dense as possible and moving along as quickly as possible with my story.
Well, you mentioned that that's what happened in your first book, Smoke and Gravity, but also in this current book, Full Count. And I have to wonder, that idea of fragments, in other words, you have a paragraph here, a paragraph here, a paragraph here, three different things going on, but then they all eventually merge. It's mm-hmm. It's rather cinematic. Are there movie options on your work?
Well, the movie rights to Smoke and Gravity were optioned by Oley Films. Chris Olsen, Superfella out on the West Coast, has done a good job of shopping it around. And a fellow by the name of Colonel Johnson wrote a wonderful screenplay for Smoke and Gravity. And we'll see what happens with Full Count. I'm going to send a copy to Colonel Jones, and but it's also something I may like to take on myself, try an adaptation for the screen.
Mm-hmm. Now, Smoke and Gravity, it's not about baseball, but it's about another thing that gets thrown into the sky, boomerangs.
Right.
Yeah. And in this case, that book opens with a man naked in a field who has been tossing boomerangs, which seems like a rather dangerous endeavor if one is naked in a field.
Indeed.
And he is 6 for 50 in catching them.
Right.
So I'm wondering, is there the equivalent in boomerang throwing as there is, say, in this latest book of a 400 season?
Well, one of the things that I think we draw on with the boomerangs and Smoke and Gravity is this place of grace, this place where things come together. And of course, that is mentioned throughout the book with Billy's performance of whether or not he's in the zone. And of course, it is his collision with Cameron that yanks him very suddenly from the zone that has come to him throughout his baseball career.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So did you throw boomerangs?
I do throw boomerangs. And in fact, I own about 26 boomerangs and various shapes and sizes. And boomerang throwing is not something I do a whole lot, but it can be an enjoyable way to spend a nice spring afternoon with a little breeze. And so I did have a little experience to write from there.
Clothed? Or?
I'd say almost always clothed, yes.
Right. Now, there was a challenge or two with publication of your first book, Smoke and Gravity.
Well, the book was originally with a small press in Connecticut, and the chief editor and I were going round and round about some changes she wanted made and changes I thought were quite ludicrous. I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and a buddy of mine was going to a Fred Chappell reading and asked me if I wanted to go. He was headed to Greensboro, to UNCG, and I said, sure, I'll go. And on my way out the door, I grabbed my manuscript. And after the reading, I spoke to Mr. Chappell and said, look, you know, it'd mean a lot to me if you'd just hold on to this for a few days and mail it back. Well, ends up, he kept it more than a few days, and a week or two later, I was in Arizona. My wife, Rebecca, called me and said, you have a letter from Mr. Chappell. And I said, well, open it up. And Fred really loved the book and gave me a lot of support. And he gave me the confidence to leave this small press in Connecticut. We had an exit clause that made that fairly easy. And at the time, Charlene Baker, a Durham novelist and creative writing instructor at Duke, was opening a small press and said, I'll print it just like it is. And I said, great. And I just had a very nice experience there and with the small press. And then Full Count, as it came along, I had submitted it. And about that time, the press changed hands. And Wanda Mukherjee called me, the new owner and editor-in-chief, and said, look, we want to do another edition of Smoke and Gravity, and let's look at Full Count. And mm-hmm. And so I've just been really happy with my experience with the Paper Journey Press and really very thankful for it.
Okay. We're talking with Raleigh author Wynn Nagel. His new book is Full Count, about Major League Baseball. It's set in Raleigh, where the city actually has a Major League Baseball team, and at least in this world of fiction, an openly gay Major League Baseball player. We'll continue our conversation with Wynn Nagel about some of the other things he's done in his life And that's all coming up shortly on The State of Things. We are talking today with author Wynne Nagle. His new book is called Full Count. It recounts the meeting of an unusual cast of characters. They include a sailor, an openly gay baseball player, a street preacher, among others. We are talking with Wynne Nagle about his books and the fiction in them. And I want to turn a corner right now and talk about what you do and what you have done, aside from writing this book and Smoke and Gravity. At the moment, you're teaching at Lewisburg College.
That's correct. I've been there about 8 years and just love it. I love being in the classroom and have the opportunity to work with just a lot of super young folks at the college.
But among the other jobs you've had along the way, and I'm going to go down the list here, okay? You were at one point what you describe as the world's worst playing tennis instructor. Worst tennis playing tennis instructor.
Yes, and I want to be clear there. I was a horrible tennis player, but I wasn't too bad of an instructor. And the way that came about, when I was at Elon College about 20 years ago, I had a friend of mine, Steve Higgins, who always talked about this magical golden place, Chautauqua Institution. And I said, Steve, one day, I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm going. And it turns out that one of the few jobs available was that of tennis instructor at the Boys and Girls Club. And Chautauqua Institution is pretty much like a college campus for adults and families. Anyone who doesn't know about it, I encourage to research. It's a fine place to spend some time. But anyway, this job of tennis instructor was open, and I had played a year on the high school tennis team, and I thought, well, I'll give it a shot. And Melinda, this is going to reveal a little of my deceitfulness, but I actually kept a tennis book by the phone, and when Greg Prechtel would call me from upstate New York to interview me, he would say, Wynne, well, how would you teach a top spin serve? And I would say, Mr. Prechtel, could you hold on a second? My roommate just came in, and I'd flip through this book and find the appropriate drill. And so what ends up happening is I get the job and spend a lot of the summer avoiding playing in the doubles match among some of the staff members at lunch because I didn't want to be found out. And the instructing went pretty well. I'd play some Madonna music and have the junior high girls doing the Madonna dance, the tennis dance on the court, or let the 8-year-old boys, if they got a serve in, they got to throw a wet sponge at me. So they actually had me back for 3 years, even though I was eventually found out. When it was the first time I stepped in as the substitute fourth in the lunchtime tennis match, it was, oh, who gets the tennis instructor? Who gets the tennis instructor? And the second time I stepped in as a substitute fourth, it was, who has to play with Wynne? But it's a wonderful place, and I'm really grateful for having the opportunity to spend some summers up there at Chautauqua Institution.
Right. Now, you were also a barge driver.
Yes, and I told your producer, Alex, that we could have as easily said I was a dishwasher during that same period. But barge driver sounded a little more romantic. I lived on a little remote island just north of St. Simon's Island, Georgia. It's called Little St. Simon's Island, accessible only by boat. And it's about 14 square miles, most of which are forest and dirt roads and beaches. And I worked there with about 15 people, and we had up to 20 guests, so never more than 35 people in this 14 square miles. And we all worked really hard to keep things operating. Even when we didn't have guests, it took a lot of full-time work to keep things moving. And one of the things we would do is I'd take this 30-foot or so flat-bottom barge over across the inland waterway, and we'd meet about 14 vendors to get our food, meaning we'd meet the meat person, the fish person, the produce person. And then we'd have the beer person, the wine truck. And I'm sure these truck drivers just hated having us on the route because they had to work around the tide, and we'd have about a 20-minute window to get loaded. But that was my barge driving experience. And so I don't want to, it certainly was not the driving this huge vessel across the Atlantic Ocean type of thing.
Now, were you more a barge driver than you were a tennis instructor?
I would have to say a pretty clean safety record, which is about all we're looking for, I guess, in barge driving.
Right. And finally, you grew up in Morehead City. Right?
That's correct.
And you are an avid poker player. And poker turns up in this game. Indeed, there's a scene in this game where Billy, who is just coming to grips with being a gay Major League Baseball player, he is in a poker game and he's trying to bluff.
He is. In fact, I think he's also trying just as hard to lose all his chips. So he's happy that the bluff is not successful because he's ready to leave the room and take a walk. But I have enjoyed getting to know the game of poker. I think it's a fascinating game and vastly misunderstood. But it's been very good to me. I've made a lot of friends playing poker here in the area. The Raleigh Wolfpack Poker Club is composed primarily of NCSU grads, and which I can kind of join in since I did my graduate work there. And so it's really a group of computer engineers and a computer scientist and money guys with this hapless English instructor who they allow to play with them, and just a bunch of great guys, and I appreciate the friendships I've made and the fun I've had playing poker with
now
them.
Now, is poker going to turn up in a bigger way down the line in anything you're writing?
Yeah, you know, I've really done a lot of research the last 2 years. I've read about every poker book in print and some that aren't. I've corresponded with professional poker players, and I really think my next novel will be framed in some way by the game of poker, and I'm still weighing some options and looking at possibilities, but I think poker will play a role.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. Wynn Nagel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wynn Nagel's new book is called Full Count. He is appearing at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh Thursday night.